When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Packages for my cell phone. We are going to talk about capitalism and education.
Speaking of planned obsolescence, let's talk about how they've planned for our children to be obsolescent.
There you go. This is why they pay her the big bucks. And by they, I mean our patrons, who I split the money and give half to Redacted.
Listen, they're why I can afford to eat shrimp many times per month. So I'm not complaining.
Oh,
I'm eating
God.
Way too much shrimp to be complaining about my financial status.
You do eat a lot of shrimp. I'm not a shrimp girl.
I love shrimp.
I wish I did. It's in a lot of things that I think I would like, you know?
I like shrimp far more than I like fish.
Well, I think now more than ever, people keep being like, wait, so do you like the education system or not? And I'm like, I don't not like it.
I like that there's a system. I don't like the one we made. I would prefer a different one.
I think that it needs to be restructured in the sense that, like, people are saying defund it. I think that's the wrong answer. I think that we need to go over, like, how the funding formulas are done and reevaluate where money is going. I also think that it needs more money, but nobody likes to hear that. Everybody wants to hear, you know, it'll be so much cheaper to do it a different way. And I'm like,
that's how we got here.
Literally cutting corners. And like, I don't know. I think there needs to be more oversight, more government control. And people are like, that sounds horrifying.
Yeah, it does.
Well, I
hate
care.
When the government talks to me. If I get an email and it says sender government, delete. And I work there. What I want is that the money is very closely watched and most of it goes to me.
Well, you know what? I would be down with that. But the problem is right now it's not closely watched at all. And people are like, where did this $6 million go?
Who's to say?
I should have
the $6 million.
No, you really should. You deserve it. But and then people with the money thing, they're like, okay, well, when my little tiny brain hears money, I think business. So
yeah.
If running schools like education is a human right, which it is, if that's not working, why don't we run it like a business? And it's like that shit doesn't work either.
And I think people fail to forget, like, we have capitalism. Okay, we're going to take it back. So when Virginia was founded, it was the Virginia Company. Mm-hmm. So capitalism is so deeply embedded into our culture and our ideas of what is good and what is correct and what is the goal, that people lose the sight line of the fact that, like, things like schools, the post office, they are supposed to be a service, not a business. So when you're looking for the ROI, which is return on investment, from a service, you're never going to find it, because the point of a service is not ROI. But because our country was literally founded on ROI, that's like the lens that we look at everything through. And you have to free yourself from the ROI shackles. Who the fuck cares about the ROI?
I know. I've had people in the comment section say teachers work for parents. And
no one says that to me, but I have heard that.
It's interesting to me because I'm like, this is not a Wendy's. Like, people who think I pay taxes and the taxes fund public schools, therefore I am a stakeholder in public schools and I get a say in what they do or do not do. Like, that mindset really reinforces, like, people who already think capitalism is the answer to education.
And, like, most of your taxes go to Lockheed Martin, so go talk to their receptionist about their office snacks, because that would be more aligned with your line of thinking. And then the other thing I was just thinking about with like ROI, I think it's also like we live in a capitalist society in a country that was founded on capitalism. So we view a return as monetary, because mm-hmm. I would say that I do believe in return on investment and ROI. But to me, a return is not necessarily a monetary thing. So like a kid having a better understanding of something to me is the return on my investment. Like that is not tangible where you can put it on a graph or a spreadsheet and figure out how much the dollar amount is worth. But to me, like if we're putting money, which is dollars, in and then we're getting learning gains out, that is a return on your investment, even though it doesn't necessarily mean we paid ourselves back for the money that we spent. To me, that's, it's a service. Like, duh, the return on the investment is having a population that knows how to read
and perhaps think critically. I mean, I I would pay a
pretty
penny.
One right now.
Yeah. I cannot give you a number, but I would pay so much fucking money to have a society that could think critically. Oh, bring back media literacy if it ever was present. Okay, so what you're saying, I think of education the same way I think of like roads are essential. It's a foundational thing on which everything else is built. And I think people hear that and they're like, socialism, it's communism.
Well, I'm not even one to defend the founding fathers or idolize them, but the founding fathers put money aside for public education before they wrote the Constitution.
Wow.
I don't think most people realize that. After the Revolutionary War, when our government was functioning under the Articles of Confederation, all we had was a Congress. We had no president. We had no court system. The Northwest Ordinances, when we started to go out west, because this is what the colonists want to go to Ohio. That was our whole shit. The British were like, you can't go to Ohio. And they were like, there's rivers in Ohio. We're going. And then we won the war. And then we went to Ohio. And Thomas Jefferson was like, one of those pieces of land, the money should go towards public education before we had the Constitution. So people acting like it's some like socialist new age ass idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's older than the Constitution. American public education funding is older than the Second Amendment.
I don't know where we lost the plot so bad, but I will always go back and blame Ronald Reagan without Googling it. I don't want it entered in a fact checker.
I was literally about to say, maybe segregation had a lot to do with it. That's when the fight started about funding a lot more.
Yeah. The desegregation of public schools and the way that it simply did not happen for like 2 decades is actually crazy.
I cannot tell you how awkward it felt the other day to be in my class where every single student is black and we watched the Ruby Bridges movie. Mm-hmm. Like, and a couple of them commented on it. They're like, our school's like, I was like, well, it's a lot to unpack, you guys. I was like, when we get to Unit 7, we will talk about this at length.
People did a lot of backflips to get around desegregating schools. And those backflips were really rooted in a lot of capitalism.
Yeah, they used funding as like a scapegoat to reinforce segregation and used funding as like a mechanism of control.
Yes. And it's like because it led to things like redlining in within school districts, those funding disparities that they created have only gotten worse as time goes on, because it creates that self-fulfilling prophecy, like last episode when we talked about property tax funding schools. You guys fucked with the school system. You fucked with the school district lines. You fucked with the funding back when you were trying to get around desegregating schools. And then it just got worse and worse and worse. Bottom line, when you approach education as a business, it doesn't work.
And I feel like the same way about if you approach the DMV as a business, the library as a business, anything. An inherent structure of a business is to provide the highest level of service possible for your highest paying customers. Mm-hmm. That is a business model that's generally carried throughout most businesses. That cannot be the model in a service, because the point of a service is to provide the highest level of service to the people that need it the most, who are inherently probably not going to be the highest paying.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's why you can't take a business model and slap it onto a service and expect that service to be functioning the way it's like needed to function.
100%. Especially when we're seeing how predatory these private education institutions and for-profit universities and these companies, they're just predatory. And it's like, we see them marketing their services with ulterior motives to like just make money and not to help teachers, not to help students. And great business model. Standardized testing is worth billions of dollars. Horrible for our kids. I don't know if this is related, but I'm going to say it anyways. But like when we look at higher education and how tuition costs go up with inflation and stuff, it's like you guys are super profitable. Good for you. But then you're making
people.
At what
cost?
Yeah, exactly. Literally at what cost? And students aren't consumers purchasing a service. They are mandated to be there by the government. Like
they don't like it. As someone that's with them all day, every day, if it wasn't a mandate, don't think they would be doing it.
I hated having somebody teach me math against my will. I think I really hammered it home last episode, but I hate these companies. I hate the thought that knowledge is a product for them. And I hate that like the purchasing of these products is like shitty because it's only people who can afford tutoring services that can do well on some of these tests, for example. It's like when you see education as a right, it really pisses you off to see people treating it like a market, I guess.
Yeah, people are treating education like it's eyebrow waxing. We're like, oh, if you don't get it, like it's fine, you'll be okay. But it's really not that way.
But then it's also like people that hop online and they're like, why is everyone so stupid? And it's like, we've been trying to talk about this and to fix it. But it's like
the children have been left behind.
The other thing that I feel like it fuels into is the school voucher system and the privatization of schooling, because if people are viewing education as a public good to be bought and sold, then they're probably going to make the next jump into why shouldn't we fund private schools? Because in their mind, they're already thinking education is a product.
That's what I was gonna say. They think it's a product in the same way that like the government usually does not employ construction workers. The government usually hires a private business to do a product for them with their workers, because that is a product. Mm-hmm. Like building a building, the building's the product. So I think people apply that same logic to education. Like, why would we employ our own teachers and use our own supplies and our own facilities when we could just hire a business to do it? That would be much more quote unquote efficient.
And they do. For example, standardized testing companies are federal contractors.
Literally. And a lot of them are state contractors too.
Yes.
And some of the same companies are both.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard about a company in trainings at my district for our state's test, and then later doing like research for the podcast and stuff, I saw the same company was working with the federal government, and I thought they were more local, but I was like, no, I guess that would make sense that like a testing company wouldn't just work with one state.
4 years ago, I would hop on here and be like, this school good, this school bad, this like whatever, but I can't do that anymore because I've come to talk to so many people that are like, you don't know shit. I'm like,
you don't know shit about dick.
I don't know shit about dick.
I work at this charter school and Jesus himself funded us.
But the private schools that are both private and very, very minimally funded by the federal government or funded zero by the federal government, like perhaps Elon Musk's school.
Hey, Elon Musk's school is funded by the South African apartheid. It's a different government.
Oh, you know what? Fuck me. So it's like the schools that are fully independent and get very, very little federal funding, they are the ones that are able to operate like businesses, because the less federal funding you get, the less you are tied to laws like IDEA, which serve special education students, the less you are tied to the Every Student Succeeds Act, because the federal government's job is to enforce these federal laws primarily. And if you don't follow those laws, you don't get that money. But if you're a school that doesn't get that fucking money anyways, you don't give a shit about that money and you don't have to follow those laws. And there's nothing that mandates you to. It's very annoying. There's a 55-page document that I read about it the other day. Blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares about the kids unless they get money. It's basically the thing that I took away from it. I was like, okay, perfect. So shouldn't we want to follow these laws?
It's kind of, this is like a bad version of, so like, okay, so what you're saying is like, no educational entity follows the law out of the ethics of following the law. They only follow the law as a bribe to get funding. Kind of like when this was in like the 80s, I think, when people wanted to raise the drinking age to 21 in the United States. Before that, every state had their own. So like some states it was 18, some it was older. And there were like so many teenagers dying in drunk driving accidents. So a lot of moms went to the government and were like, hey, fuckers, do something. So they made a rule because the federal government does not have the authority to regulate drinking ages. So they said, we will not give you highway funding unless you make your drinking age 21. And that's how they accomplished it, was literally by holding the highway funding like a little carrot. They said, do what public health recommends, please. We cannot make you, but we can bribe you. So the same concept as when I give my students Jolly Ranchers for working. They're not doing the packet for the love of the game. They're doing it for the Jolly Rancher.
So when we're looking at like these private schools that are funded independently and have questionable, they decide if they want to follow the law or not. We're seeing that like rich families can kind of shop for their education, and lower income families are just like, here's your neighborhood school down the block.
Good luck.
I hope you like it. Toodaloo.
Yeah.
And it's like these vouchers that are given, I find so insulting, because I hate that it doesn't cover the whole thing. It doesn't cover transportation. It doesn't cover food. So it's like, it's such a slap in the face.
Kind of the same concept I was saying of like a business caters to its highest spending customers. The biggest, most common way I've seen for these charter, private, whatever, for these schools to be exclusionary is by not providing transportation, because then you automatically self-select to only households that either have a stay-at-home parent or a parent with a very flexible job.
Yeah.
And like that, so in my district, that's really how they get away with it. We have a lot of free public charters, but almost none of them provide buses.
Yeah. And technically, private schools cannot say you're rejected because you're poor, you're rejected because whatever. Like, they're technically,
they
cannot
reject you for not having enough volunteer hours.
They can get around quite a lot of stuff just by being sneaky about what they're putting in their requirements.
I have mixed feelings about it. I have so many mixed feelings about it, because a big part of me is like, that's inherently wrong to reject a child from getting a certain type of education. So I guess the way that I view it is not necessarily rejection, but like what environment is going to be best for that student. Because I have seen like, and this might not be popular to say, but like one of the things that my old administrator, she's not at our school anymore, she would say like, we're a public school. It's come one, come all. We don't get to choose or reject them. But and we were talking about it in the context that we have a lot of students that we do not feel equipped to handle. Like, the students have needs that we are not meeting within our building, and it's at the detriment of the other kids around them as well, and the student who has the need themselves. And we were saying, like, we wish that we were in a position to be like, we can send this student to this place with more resources, because like, it's hard to be in a school where it's like, this is objectively not working. Like, you being in this environment is not working for you, it's not working for these other kids, and it's not working for me. But because we're a public school, you're just here.
I always had an inclusive schools where like general education and special education are together and in one. And a lot of people have been coming to me recently and saying, what do you think about the new research coming out? And let me tell you, the research is not public. It says that it will be published this spring, but they expect it to be public online sooner. I have not seen this research, but I have seen the headline that is circulating. And the headline is, top scholar says evidence for special education inclusion is fundamentally flawed. And made a lot of people run away with that and be like, see, I told you, I told you. But then when we look inside what the authors are saying, there's one researcher, and I'm just going to call him Doug, because his name is Douglas F-U-C-H-S, and I believe that's fucks, but I don't believe that that's actually how he says that. So if you open the article that everybody was saying, did you see this headline? Did you see this headline? The first thing that Doug says is, we're not saying the evidence indicates full inclusion cannot work. We're saying that the evidence in terms of where to place these children is extremely weak, is fundamentally flawed, and no conclusions can be drawn from the evidence. And if you read on, Doug says some number of kids with disabilities can and should be in general classrooms. It's manifestly obvious that they're doing reasonably well. They should stay there. But for a majority, they need intensive instruction, and we know how to provide intensive instruction. What I'm hearing when I hear that, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the research to see if I'm right or I'm crazy, in order to fully serve students in their least restrictive environment, you need to have staff who can help them, can implement their IEP to the full extent of the law. It is a legal document, and we have to make sure that teachers are supported in doing that. They have training to do that, et cetera, et cetera. And when you go into an inclusive school where they do not have that support, they don't have training, a lot of times they can do harm that way. And we see that in people that come out of public schools that are inclusive and they're like, my child was not served here. Mm-hmm. And it's like 9 times out of 10, I bet you that teacher was asking for help and saying, I need support. They need a one-on-one. They need like an assessment. We saw assessments pushed from 2020 all the way to freaking 2024. You know, we're seeing like kids falling through the cracks, and it's because we don't have the people. And it's like, mm-hmm. we really need to be serving students fully. And it's like, I can see how perhaps this evidence coming out could be like, if what he's saying is how I'm reading it, it's like, yeah, it's really hard if you don't have support to say inclusion works all the time when you're not doing it right.
And what I took away from that, that I think is true in addition to what you're saying, is that for some kids, it does not work. And I think a lot of times inclusion is treated as like a catch-all solution blanket, because like you said, it's easier to do with understaffing. Like it's a very like good look. And then I think it's easy to be like inclusion, least restrictive environment impossible. But I think it just so depends on the kid, and it's such a case by case basis. And I've seen kids who are in a gen ed classroom who do not want to be there. They are actively saying they do not want to be there, and they're being forced to be there because it's quote unquote less restrictive. But I think we have a very limited view of what a restriction means. What I've seen a lot is like, it's tough for kids who maybe academically they're good in that class, but social, emotionally, stimulation wise, they're not good in a class with 30 other people. So I understand why they were put in an inclusion setting from an academic perspective, but from a social perspective, I feel like for a lot of kids, we're not equipping them with the services they need. I'm really happy that there's a student, I won't speak on the specifics, I'm gonna be super vague on purpose here, a student that I taught that like academically, I was like, absolutely, like she should be doing this level of work, but she needed a one-on-one aid to be successful, and she did not have it. Now she does and is like off in her life, and this is a while ago, but she did not have the one-on-one aid when she was with me. It was a very hard for everybody involved. Thankfully, her parents were like really knew their stuff, knew how to advocate for her, knew the law, knew that she was entitled to that. So she got what she needed. And I saw her life just like transform when she got that. Mm-hmm. And I think that if for a lot of kids, they just mark inclusion, least restrictive environment, and then move on. But I think that it's an ongoing conversation. And I think that it's not treated like an ongoing conversation.
So there's three main models for students with disabilities, and it's full inclusion, partial inclusion, and mainstreaming. And we could get into this in a whole other episode, but Doug here says, well, no, actually, this is the staff writer, Jill Barchet. She says, school leaders are in a tough spot when they have to decide whether to invest in improving the general classroom to accommodate everyone or to create and refine interventions that happen outside of the classroom. And at the moment, she says, research can't really tell them what works best.
Yeah, it's like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and there's a lot of pros and cons to each side.
And when we're looking at people calling for vouchers or school choice, they are literally saying, hey, let's take the money for public schools that was intended for public schools, give it to kids to go elsewhere with that money, and leaving the public school with the same exact expenses they had 2 weeks ago in one less student, that's not going to fix the public school system. And then people are like, well, we're going to punish the public school system, because that's what happens when you don't do a good job in a capitalistic society. You lose your money because
it's, and like, that's like our universal punishment is you right. lose money. That's the only look we have to serve as a country.
Right. But the federal money goes directly to students that are protected under IDEA. that are protected under Title I. So you're punishing the most vulnerable populations, and then you're screaming that it's not working when we have things like, you know, inclusion. They're saying it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Well, did you pull out that IA? Yeah, it doesn't work
when you have no money.
Right. What did you do with my para? Did you take my para down the hall to administer tests to the English language learners because you don't have a coordinator for that? Did you pull my para out to go be a one-on-one for a student in the other classroom because you didn't have the staff to do that?
And one thing aside from staffing levels that drives me insane that I've seen so often firsthand is that special education teachers and service providers are so burdened with paperwork, meetings, and documentation that it pulls them out of class to give services. And I really hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. I'm so sorry to everyone if I do, but it's always been communicated to me that this is fine. The amount of times that there hasn't been services provided because the service provider was in a meeting with parents of another student, was having to conduct like a review meeting or something like that. And all those things are legal and required, but to expect one person to be the service provider and the documenter meeting coordinator for a group of like 40 children,
the caseloads are unreasonable. People are drowning.
So like obviously you're going to be missing class for an IEP meeting, but then in your next IEP meeting, well, I didn't provide the service because I wasn't in class, I was in a different meet. Like, it's just crazy.
So we have this kind of snowball happening, right? And then parents of disabled students, obviously, I'm never going to look at a parent and say, well, your child here is the sacrificial lamb. You must stay. To do the betterment of society, you must stay right here. I'm not going to say that to someone because your child, on a very like primal instinctual level, you want the best for that child. And a lot of teachers do too. Like, believe it or not, like we really, really give a shit. And it's hard because you don't want to say stay where you are and maybe don't get services. But also, is the private school that you're going to accept that child? Are they going to serve that child? Are they going to follow that IEP to the fullest extent of the law? Like, taking your child from one environment and then going somewhere else, it's like the devil you know or the devil you don't. And it's like sometimes it goes so well and they thrive in a private environment because X, Y, or Z, a million reasons, you know, but sometimes it doesn't work. And like, that's also shitty. Like, we shouldn't be in this position, you know, like we shouldn't be funneling money away from public schools. We shouldn't have private schools that don't have to follow the law. And we shouldn't be looking at, as a parent, I want my kids to feel confident in school in every way. And of course, academics will be a part of that. But I know, especially once they enter grades I've never taught, I will need a little extra support to keep their learning on track. I've already been poking around in IXL for my daughter, who will be in preschool soon, and I really like it. IXL is an online learning program that helps kids with math, language arts, science, and social studies. It adapts to their needs, providing personalized practice that's engaging and effective. And it's backed by research. Kids who use IXL consistently score higher on tests. What I love most is how IXL gives students the right help at the right time, whether they're struggling with a concept or pushing ahead. One subscription covers all grades, pre-K through 12th, so it's all in one place. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S., and 1 in 4 students are learning with it right now. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Teacher Quit Talk listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Education like a product. It's the snowball effect that I said, you know?
It comes from every end. And like I said, I think the fundamental thing here is like when you run education like a business, everything is very uniform. And being uniform inherently does not work with children, especially children with disabilities, of having a uniform approach. It just does not work. And I feel like it's it's such a decision that needs to be made with the parents, the teachers, the case manager. And it truly is like, I think we've labeled least restrictive environment as a very specific thing rather than approaching it as what would be your least restrictive environment? What is a restriction to you? Because some kids, like academics, can be very restricting. Some kids, a highly stimulating environment can be very restricting. Like, we view restriction in one light, not restriction as like all the types of restriction of transportation, of social, of emotional, of academic, when like it really is just so different for every kid. So I wish I had like a cute little solution of what I would do. But like, I guess what I would do was have appropriate levels of staffing to have like creative solutions and be able to actually serve children in like the best way possible rather than just being like, because I feel like, again, I read a fair amount of IEPs. I am not an expert, but as a gen ed teacher, I read IEPs. Almost all of them have the same two or three services. And half the time, it's really not doing a ton for the kid. And I just feel like an IEP, it has the word individualized in there. And it feels like so many that I see are just copy and paste, either from kid to kid or from year to year. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like we're not really being intentional about how we're providing these services. It feels like to check a box so we don't lose our funding, not how could I make this the best for this unique personality or situation.
And so much of that goes back to the caseload thing, where like teachers who really give a shit and are really trying, it's like, how can you effectively manage such an intense caseload, especially when kids' needs are compounded by shit like COVID? Like, the fact that they were out of schools and now we're dealing with the repercussions of whatever they endured, like, over years. I mean, things are really stacking on top of each other here. And it's really unfortunate. And it's, like, on top of everything else. Say education is a freaking product, okay? Why are we not investing in the infrastructure of schools? Why do you want to take money away from public schools, where I was at a public school that didn't have a fucking elevator? They told my kid who was on crutches to stay home for 2 weeks because how would he get up the stairs to my classroom?
Like, Jesus Christ. That's so illegal.
It is. It's fully illegal. And it's like, if you're going to say education is a product, then you're going to take money from those schools. You're not going to invest into those schools. And it's just really, really frustrating. And then people say like, oh, well, you know, it's 1% of their funding that we're taking to give to vouchers. And it's like, that is $1 million. That is a lot.
And like, okay, yeah, it's 1% of the funding. I have over 1,000 students at my school. So like, when we're talking about groups that big, 1% is a big number.
So it's frustrating because I feel like the actual thing they want to say is, I don't give a shit if public schools fail, because the privatization of education actually serves me very well. And I don't care about anybody else. That is the quiet part that they're just not saying. And it just drives me insane. If we don't have a quality education for every single child, which is a right, they deserve that, we are going to see the literacy crisis grow and grow and grow. We're going to see issues with the workforce, with job readiness. We're going to see all of the things that capitalists love. Worker bees, little worker bees. Well, we're not going to have any fucking worker bees that can read if you keep this shit up. You know what I mean?
It's upsetting. It's jarring.
It is quite upsetting. Everything being discussed around education right now is like funding coded. Like the executive orders coming out are like, oh, well, the education department doesn't do X, Y, or Z. They're so woke. They're just indoctrinating kids. DEI. Like, it's all this shit. But the intention is to defund them, or at the very least, take the money away from them and give it to
bite by bite
somebody else. I just don't understand how people follow their own logic there, you know?
I think that the people creating the logic are confident that the general public is stupid enough to not even notice that that logic doesn't make sense. But I think the people creating it know that it doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're like, this will sell. Let's just say that. People will believe anything.
Guys, we're filming this on February 1st. You're not going to see this for a while. But so much is happening so fast. And it's really just like, fuck, how am I going to make it for 4 years if this is what they're doing to education? Like, it's driving me crazy. Get out of here.
Everyone. Okay. I'm so tired of people telling me I'm being overdramatic. I need to find my, I know that I like scrubbed my old Twitter from the internet because I had it since I was 13, but I wish it wasn't gone, because I need to find my many, many detailed tweets from 2015, 2016, and 2017 about Roe versus Wade, and the amount of people in my replies, "You're crazy, they'd never do that, that could never happen." I'm so tired of people telling me I'm crazy.
You hid in a bush during that convention, like, and took I was there. If you don't know that story, I don't know, go find that story.
I told my therapist that story the other day, and she literally, like, I've never seen her, like, shook. Like, I could tell her anything, and she does not, she has a good, like, she's good at hiding her emotions. She was shook as fuck when I told her that. Mm-hmm. And because I told her, I was like, she always makes a start each session with, like, what's one word to describe how you're feeling? And I said mine was, like, over it when, like, a lot of the political stuff was going. And I was telling her, I was like, I'm just over it, and I'm over the people that told me I was crazy now complaining. I'm over it. And then she was like, what do you mean they told you they were you were crazy? And I told her. And then also just like, I went to college. I have a sociology degree. We talked about historic examples of fascism takeover. We talked about historic examples of dictator taking over. And I have pattern recognition skills. Like, I'm seeing the writing on the walls. I can see exactly the things that are going to happen. Like, you saw Donald Trump, like, very publicly bashed Selena Gomez. Find another example of a president bashing a private citizen like that.
With things like Supreme Court cases, I don't know why we were saying never. I don't know why we were like, well, that can't happen. I mean, I know logically why we said it, but I don't understand it, because it needs to be codified into law. Like, there can't be loopholes like that. And if they were talking about it for 50 years, we knew what loopholes were coming down the pipe. It's not like we were like, whoa.
Simpsons meme where it's like the Republican convention, we hate everyone, we want everything to be worse, and then the Democrat one is like, we hate ourselves, we can't govern.
Literally, it's like, so bad. But like, the thing that's shocking to me is hearing that Trump is going to try to dismantle the Department of Education with an executive order, because like, that's different, but like, it's like they can strip it of funding, which is what they're also trying to do. It's like, well, if this doesn't work, we have 8,000 other ways to make it happen.
They're like, you're not letting us do it in the big, blatant, obvious way. So we will decide to go with the death by 1,000 paper cuts instead.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I'm like freaked the fuck out about. And like, I try really hard to tie freaking out into like things I truly believe we should be freaking out about right now. And then say, we will freak out about this, but you need to know about it so that we can see it for what it is. It's hard to figure out ways to tell people to pay attention in a sustainable way, because I think the average person is not like you and me, where like, we hear about shit going on in the education system and we're like, put me in, coach, I'm gonna fuck them up, let's do this.
Well, I was even about to say, I'm very grateful for the content that you put out, and I know a lot of people have been in my DMs, not angry at me, but kind of wondering, why are you not saying more, why are you not addressing these
She's
executive
employed,
orders,
you guys.
And literally, like, I don't think you guys understand that when I'm in an environment that multiple times a week there's fights at my school, multiple times this year we've had to call ambulances, multiple times this year we've had to call police, I'll get schedule notices throughout the day, I'm literally always having to pivot every 5 to 10 mm-hmm. minutes to provide children with instruction, I cannot have my news alerts on and analyze every executive order. I just can't.
And
I wish I could.
Great.
And I really appreciate that you put stuff out in digestible ways that I can like tap, tap, tap. I do skip some of the ones with a lot of text, I'll be honest with you. I'm tired. But I can see the headlines you share, and I'm confident that you're sharing accurate headlines. And I think that, like, as we move into another administration, and, like, this might be weird and people might get mad at me for saying this, but, like, I think it's very tricky to trust mainstream media. And I think a lot of what we see is either blatantly false or fear-mongering or has an agenda. So I think it's good to find individuals and small organizations that you deeply trust, and then get your news from them.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of what is just like in the greater conversation is just so unreliable.
It is. If I had a nickel for every time somebody texted me or DM'd me and said, MSNBC said this, or like ABC reporter just said this, and then they 2 hours later, they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I need to
everyone
see a
wants to be first more than they want to be right.
Uh-huh. I'm just going to leave education policy in my bio and take out news because I never want to position myself as a journalist. I want
as
to
like
position
a breaking news.
Hell no. I want to be like a civilian who's trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with like sources. I want primary documents up in this bitch. I want to
and
know.
You like things to be vetted and detailed. If you are in the industry of breaking news, that's just inherently not your guiding light, which is fine, kind of, not really, but I guess it's just a very different industry to be breaking news versus comprehensive news, and I think they are both needed.
I can get to the bottom of what this means, mm-hmm. and what is happening, but I need a couple days to
well,
do
that's it. Just what like the real news does. So like I watch either NBC or ABC. I kind of switch between the two, and I always joke there's this one guy every time he comes on the screen, I go, that's my guy. His name is Joe Cox. He's an aviation analyst, and he's just my guy because I really like his office setup. And whenever anything happens with planes, they have him come on and analyze it and talk about it because he was a pilot for years. He has model planes behind him and then paintings of planes, and I just really appreciate it.
I love him.
So maybe he's an evil person, but I like his background, so that's my guy. Because you cannot expect fucking Lester Holt to be an expert on aviation law. So every couple weeks when something plane related happens, they'll get him on there. And one time, I don't know if he was on vacation or what, they had this other guy and he made no fucking sense. He was not enlightening at all.
It's very
like, bring me Joe Cox.
When this federal funding freeze shit was going on, ABC was saying all kinds of incorrect things as facts. And people were like freaking out to me. And I was like, it's wrong. I know it's on the news, but it's wrong. And like, I just want people who come to our content and also my content to feel like we can talk about it without it being like run around like a chicken with your head cut off. Like, I think there are actionable things that we can do. There are things that are really scary that might be coming, but like, you know, we're focused on education, so we're not going to be like spread out to like 8,000 issues necessarily, but like if you need to know about education, we are going to be present. Because I am scared about the things going on. And like, I don't think I'm an alarmist person, but I'm genuinely freaked out.
And that's what I'm annoyed is everyone keeps telling me I'm being an alarmist and I'm literally not.
People both tell me I'm an alarmist and that I'm underreacting to the same thing that I'll say. So I'll put out a video and I'll get half people being like, well, I'll get a third of people saying thank you. I'll get a third of people saying you're underreacting and a third saying you're overreacting.
Perfect.
All in all to say, we will be here present talking about education and don't fucking say shit to Redacted. She has a job. She is employed. She is a teacher. Like, people can't just sit online and yap the way that I do. Especially, I think people think I just raw dog it and get on the internet and start talking. It takes
No, you're researching.
Hours. It's so annoying.
And I will say, I have never seen teenagers. I've been teaching 11th grade since 2019. So with just a little break there in the middle. But so I've been teaching through some world events. I've been teaching through COVID. Like, I've been teaching through some world events. Kids are very aware of the news right now. A group of them came up to me and asked what I would do if an ICE agent knocks on our door. And I was like, well, the first thing I want to say is all of you were born in the United States and have social security numbers. So I can tell you're feeling scared and you are not exactly the demographic they're going for. So maybe cool a little bit. And then I had to explain to them, like, this is what FERPA is. This is what a judge order would have to say. And then I showed them the email from the superintendent that said no ICE agents can have contact with any students or teachers. They can only talk to school police and administrators. And like, I was glad they asked because I was like, oh, I probably should have explained this to you earlier. But like, the kids are deeply aware. They're online and they're reading. They might not be reading the packets I give them, but they're reading those headlines. Do you have anything to add to the people?
No, but we should talk about the curriculum stuff next week where like how capitalism shows up in curriculum and like what is valued within curriculum.
We should. Thank you all for being here. We love you.
I love you guys. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. Geico's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. and with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are. There's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone, but not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.